is wise to shop at All American Auto Wreckers, with most parts in stock and already off the vehicle. They provide a speed and convenience most other places do not. Call them at 631-286-5500 or stop in at 1383 Montauk Highway in East Patch Hog, Long Island. Online at allamericanautowreckers.com.
From Montauk to Miller Place, LI News Radio is your station for local news and information.
All right, the national scene, local, we're going to cover it all. No better person to do that with than my next guest, Jeff Gill, Millennial Strategies. Always a pleasure. I haven't spoken to in a while. How's your summer going, my friend, and how is Lincoln James?
My summer is going fantastic, Jay, and we just sent Lincoln James off to school. His second birthday is next week. It's amazing where the time goes.
It's fast. I remember the day he was born. My goodness, it's unbelievable. Yeah. It's incredible.
He's a great doctor now, Jay.
It really is. Listen, Ron Sinagra had a baby yesterday. Last Saturday was Serafina. Tell you, goes quick. Tell everybody, enjoy it when you can. Well, listen, tough to enjoy some of the goings on within the national landscape these days. Looks like deja vu all over again for this for the president with the tweets. And everything else, the condemnation from the House, I tell you, it goes on and on and on here. And, you know, and I said it earlier, you know, he was wrong for sending it out to the, as I call them, Mean Girls 2, that in the Congress, for Congresswoman, Jeff, a tough one here. But you wonder, you know, sometimes when things are moving along accordingly, you know, the tweets have always been the nemesis, in my opinion, here.
I mean, first of all, the behavior of Donald Trump in sending out not just this particular online missive, but others of its kind over the last few days is below the dignity of the office of the president. And I agree with folks on both sides of the aisle who have said that these things are racist in nature. Now, my heart doesn't bleed for the squad as it is, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her colleagues. I mean, they hold elected office and knew they would take criticism when they got elected. You know, who I really think lost here are the people who were just told by the president of the United States that if you were born somewhere else and you're now here, you should go back to your country if you're willing to say things that are not congruent with the president's agenda. I mean, that's the real danger here. And if that's a preview of the rhetoric we're going to see in the 2020 presidential race, we're in for a long, painful summer.
Listen, I agree. You can't now. That does not take away the divisive nature of Ocasio-Cortez and company. It just doesn't. We understand what they are all about. Okay, we get it. But the one thing you can't do, especially when you have immigration raids brewing left and right, you can't say you don't like it. Go back to your own country. You know, you can't do that. Yeah, for the president. Listen, it was announced. Peter King denounced it. You can't. And if you leave Zeldin, you got to think twice. You know, you can't say it was okay and everything else based on the nature of the so-called squad. You can't do it. It's the tweet itself. He does it all the time. If he didn't do it, he'd be fine. You know, go about your business. You got a lot of good things happening here, but you go back. You know, it's like the Civil War continues. You know, the Democrats, Pelosi and company, the Civil War, and it's just a. It just kind of breaks away from the situations at hand that need to be taken care of. Instead, you got this type of stuff.
Oh, yeah. And it was really intriguing to me that the president makes these comments over the weekend, and Republicans around the country on the Senate and the House side, governors, et cetera, are silent. And then suddenly, as if there is like a memo issued at the RNC headquarters, you start to see an outpouring of these condemnations that aren't really condemnations. These, you know, it was bad, but it wasn't racist, but also AOC's bad too, kind of statements. One after another, members of the Senate and the House just issued statements that said, well, I wish you wouldn't say it quite that way, but I do agree you have an immigration problem. It would seem that, you know, congressional Republicans weren't ready to act. Until someone told them to. The entire thing seemed really, really forced to me, all of these quote-unquote condemnations that have subsequently come out.
say this also. I've had enough of Kellyanne Conway. I really. She's got to be dismissed. She won't. But you cannot ask the ethnicity. Okay? You can't do that. You can't ask the ethnicity of a reporter questioning the intention of Trump's Twitter line. You can't do that. I'm sorry. You're Kellyanne Conway. Who the heck are you? You can't do that. I mean, how many times are we going to cite improprieties of the fact of Kellyanne Conway and her behavior? That, to me, it was the last straw what happened yesterday. I'm sorry, it was.
You know, it's amazing. I did not have Kellyanne Conway in my pool of what of the rogues gallery of, you know, Trump Bond villains would still be in office on July 17th, 2019. But whoever bet on her, congratulations. It's amazing she survived this long. But you're right. I mean, you know, when you're at that level, your conduct is ultimately reflective of the president, and you're only able to do as much as your principal will allow you to do. And, I mean, she, you know, in any other administration, Democratic or Republican, she would have been fired on the spot for that. You know, the administration of George W. Bush or Ronald Reagan would have been completely intolerant of that kind of behavior. Also, by the way, for our listeners, Kellyanne Conway has roots in Suffolk County. She was once a pollster for former Suffolk County Executive Steve Levy.
I did not know that. That's a good job on your end. Did not know
and
the affiliation.
That ill-fated gubernatorial run.
Absolutely. No, I tell you, it's a good job, Jeff. Didn't know that. Jeff Geo, Millennial Strategies. I'll ask you this. I'll say, you know, listen, he's not, in my opinion, he's not. He's just not. But, you know, all the questions come up of racism. I mean, do you think the president is a racist? I'll ask outright. Do you think he is?
No. I think the president realizes that his rhetoric is something that is enjoyed and something that motivates a base that has racist tendencies. And the president understands, if you look at 2018, the only places where the president's message on immigration worked well were some of the reddest states in America, were places in the central time zone where that kind of incendiary rhetoric still has hold. I don't think the president, and at least I hope the president in his heart is not a racist, but I think he understands that saying racist stuff is what motivates his base. And the fact that he's willing to do that in order to keep his poll numbers above water and to ultimately try to win re-election is shameful, is upsetting, and is dangerous.
Jeff Gill with us. All right, let's stay on the national front for a second, okay? You got the round two coming up with these debates in a couple of weeks. Round one, not impressive to me at all. As far as Joe Biden, yet, you know, he's still there in the polls. You know, you could say what you want about Kamala Harris, but certainly Elizabeth Warren has now kind of leapfrogged her a little bit. How important, if anything, I mean, maybe it isn't to you, but how important is it? Now, I thought, you know, Joe what kind of had his moniker in the right place, Sleepy Joe, as far as Miami was concerned a couple of weeks ago. How important round two for Joe Biden to really kind of make an impression here? You know, he said he was blindsided a little bit by Harris. You know, the whole thing with the segregation and everything else. How important in Detroit will you be looking at it? July 30, 31, round two, July 31st to be exact here. How important is it to you to see Biden put on a good performance?
I think it's mission critical for the Biden campaign to put in a good performance here. I mean, going into the Miami debates, Biden was the only one in that field who had a clear path to put this primary to bed early by putting up commanding leads in Iowa and New Hampshire and demonstrating there was no path forward for people like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. And what Kamala Harris's takedown of Biden in night two of those debates did is it opened the door for these contenders to emerge. And now we live in a world where it's not Joe Biden, clear Democratic frontrunner. It's Joe Biden cohabitating among Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, and Bernie Sanders with like a little side of Pete Buttigieg kind of hanging out in fifth. And so if this presents another chance for candidates that are not Joe Biden to further distinguish themselves and further rejigger this landscape. It was clear that Biden's rather large lead in the polls was perhaps a mile wide and an inch deep. And now that folks get to know some of these other candidates, they're beginning to switch their allegiance. You're seeing the same thing with Bernie Sanders, by the way. Bernie has done nothing but lose support over the last few weeks because he's saying nothing new. It's the same old tired rhetoric. And despite the fact that a lot of his policy positions have been taken by a slew of other candidates in the field, he's not exciting anybody. So I think this is really important for both Biden and Sanders to reestablish that front runner status, to present a forward thinking vision for America. I mean, Biden's rhetoric in the previous debate was, I served with Barack Obama. Wasn't that awesome? Let's go back there. And I don't think that's enough for Democratic voters.
All right, listen, I will say this. To me, and I've said this now even before the last one, I think Harris will get the nomination, Kamala. I just do. Now, she's going to have to do a better job. She's going to have to find some solutions here. Healthcare will be key. You know, one thing with Biden and this new healthcare thing he threw out there, you cannot attach Obamacare to anything. I'm sorry, you can't. You're going to have to come up with something. But to me, Kamala Harris has dropped the ball a little bit here. She gained a lot of momentum after Miami, and we haven't heard a lot from her. She's been under the radar. Instead, she has let Elizabeth Warren kind of catapult her a little bit. Very important for Harris to get in front of the American people in a couple of weeks and prove why. She kind of got into double digits after that whole thing. Very important stuff for Harris there. What do you think?
I think you're right. I think that the best way, if I was advising the Harris campaign, I think the best way to position her is to agree with Elizabeth Warren on the issue of health care. Obviously, the idea of Medicare for all or some machination of it is incredibly powerful Democratic base. It's the issue that won the House of Representatives for the Democrats in 2018. She certainly shouldn't abandon that. But I think the difference between Harris and Warren is Harris is a former prosecutor. Harris can, I think, better emulate the vision of being able to stand on the debate stage with Donald Trump and go toe to toe. She was a law and order attorney general when she was in California, who had a strong prosecutorial record on drug crime and things like that. I think that background makes her a more attractive general election candidate, but I don't see why she would deviate from the issues where there is broad agreement among the Democratic base.
Listen, to me, she's not going to have that splash. Regarding as a kid, busing, segregation. She's not going to have that. I think she's going to have to find another way, to put herself out there. She's not going to have that one moment in time as she did in Miami. It's going to be a little different. One other thing regarding this thing, we'll move on to the state and then local. Jeff Geo, Millennial Strategies. I said this during the week. The blackout Saturday night Manhattan, de Blasio, where is he? In Iowa. I mean, come on. Quite frankly, don't tell me, you're at the controls and everything else. I'm sorry. To me, you're polling less than 1%, and you have the gall to try and not to get back immediately. I'm sorry. You did the wrong thing. I think it was grounds for this guy to be ousted. De Blasio has been nothing but a blip on the screen as far as importance is concerned to New York City and points around. He is never going to make any headway in this thing as far as the 2020 campaign is concerned. And I'll tell you one thing. Cuomo, he would have showed me something here. He has the right to remove him. Should have been removed, I think. He has been as ineffective a mayor as any mayor in the history of the city here. What's your take?
Well, you're quoting directly the New York Post op-ed from a couple of days ago, which I think makes a lot of good points about de Blasio. I mean, this is a guy who was elected by less than 10% of the voters in the city when the dust settled on the 2013 election. He has done little to endear himself to voters in New York City. The poll numbers bear that out. And, one thing that Bobby Jindal or Marty O'Malley or any of these other guys can tell you is that you cannot become president of the United States when you are really unpopular in your own base. It has been proven time and time and time again, and I don't know why this quixotic campaign is moving forward when history is just not on the mayor's side. Now, I think there were a lot of positives that came out of this blackout. I mean, nobody was hurt. It wasn't a major natural disaster. I love the images of Broadway stars performing on the street for disappointed patrons. I think they really embody the spirit of New York. And if you want to see a politician that really came out smelling like roses on this thing, you know, City Council Speaker Corey Johnson, who has citywide ambitions himself, was on Twitter every 5 minutes providing constituents updates from Con Ed. He was the one who wanted to initially hold a press conference. And when they did hold a press conference, when the mayor finally got to town, you know, it was more the Corey Johnson show than the Bill de Blasio show. I mean, you know, Johnson seized the opportunity of the mayor being in Iowa to look like a leader, to look like a mayor. And I thought that was a great piece of politics on his part. And provided a valuable public service while doing it.
De Blasio in some trouble here, Gillibrand as well. They're never going to, you know, listen, 1% or less, bow out at this point in time. Let me go to the MTA for a second, because, you know, you can't take these stories, the overtime abuse and everything else. The latest, this Raymond Murphy, you know, the foreman, who's collecting a pension at this point in time. Nothing you could do about him right now. The fact of the matter is, you know, the overtime abuse, you know, the hours not working on the job, getting paid. It's just one thing after the other. The other guy who got married in Westbury, went to Europe on taxpayer money, okay? Coaching a baseball team when he came back, when he should have been at work. You know, how much more of this, you know, can we take? I don't want to hear anymore. You know, listen, the governor oversees the MTA, Jeff. He oversees these contracts, please. You're seeing the I's dotted and T's crossed. You know, you have to take ownership of the fact that this is complete abuse here. And I don't need to hear the chairman, Pat Foy, saying, you know what, we're going to make some changes. Really. You know, that's enough is enough already. You know, I mean, how you're going to tell me 4% hike every other year? You're threatening commuters left and right? My goodness. You know, it's a mortgage payment now to try and get in the city to do a job. It's unbelievable. What has to be done here? And I don't want to hear the back and forth. Listen, start taking accountability right now. You are in charge. Do something about this right now.
Yeah, I'm with Jay. I mean, the MTA is a bloated bureaucracy that is a creature of Albany, where a lot of people who don't have any skin in the game have a real voice as to how the MTA is funded. And as long as that continues to be the case, we're going to continue to have problems. I've long been in favor of some sort of quasi-public-private solution to try to put the MTA more directly in the hands of the folks who disproportionately use it, and that's just not the case right now. That's what's unfortunate about this. It's chronically underfunded, and you know we commuters feel that pain every single day. As it pertains to the abuses by employees, I'm a union guy. I support collective bargaining. Certainly people who abuse the system should be penalized and should be penalized harsher than they're being penalized now. I think most labor bosses would be okay with that. But we have to remember that, you know, this is one of the most highly unionized states in the country. Long Island is incredibly highly unionized. And anyone who is active within their union who's listening right now probably understands that, you know, you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater when it comes to collectively bargaining contracts. You know, there are people who are saying we should abolish the union because people abuse this privilege. And that's something we simply cannot do. We can't go to a world where we're paying train conductors and folks who we put our lives in their hands $18 an hour and stuff like that. That's what they do in other states. It's been proven not to work. So you have to find a middle ground here. The vast majority of people, just like the vast majority of elected officials, you know, we're probably going to talk about elected officials who abused his power in a couple minutes. The vast majority of people for whom we put our public trust in do the right thing and want to better the world. The MTA employees that I know and I speak to take a great deal of pride in the fact that they move New York and move commuters every day. And within every public service aspect, be it the police department, be it our elected officials, or be it collectively bargained employees, there's going to be bad guys. We should do more to disincentivize bad behavior and to penalize those who violate it, but we should not blow up the system of collectively bargained contracts because of it.
Listen, I agree. But to me, it's about the guys in charge, okay? You have Pat Foy leading the way. As far as the chair, and then you had Pat Nowakowski, president of the railroad, LARRR. I mean, you know, listen, these are people who have no clue as far as how to operate here. And to me, if you are the leader of the state with the MTA being attached to you. You got to do a better job. You have had this abuse, blatant abuse. I'm sorry. I'm caught. Forget this inspector general. I'm looking at a criminal investigation here at this point in time. This is highway robbery, in my opinion, and something has to be done about it. No question. Jeff Gio, a couple of more, Jeffrey. I'll tell you, I'm really going the gambit here, but you know, I don't want to see Chuck Schumer out with another in front of a camera, please, talking to me about charitable contributions in the IRS. Yeah, please, stay on Capitol Hill and learn to work here on both sides instead of coming here to the aisle. Every time you come to the aisle in front of a camera, it means nothing to me. You know, I saw him in front of a camera in front of the vet's home. You know, where is the money to fix that dilapidated mess? I saw him in front of a camera in Glenhead regarding the New York American water disaster. Nothing has been done about that. And by the way, I'm down on this on Singus, and I'm down on Letitia James. Madeline Singus. These investigations have proved nothing so far. Down on the governor, too. His father merged those folks in the mid-'80s. You wouldn't have had this problem if he would have acted quickly here. I do not want to see this man in front talking to me about the IRS has already stated, forget charitable contribution, not happening. Not a caveat for some to deduct. I think it's false promises, it's disingenuous, and quite frankly, Schumer should be ashamed of himself. What's your take?
Well, you gave me a whole lot to unpack there, Jay. But you know, the fact of the matter is, if you want Chuck Schumer to be empowered to make your life a better place, I would suggest you go online right now and support the Democratic challengers of guys like Lindsey Graham, of Cory Gardner, and of Marsha Blackburn, and a lot of these Republicans in the Senate who are going to be vulnerable in 2020. If you want, you know, Chuck Schumer and all the other Senate Democrats to stop making empty promises, well, give them a chance to change your future. Mitch McConnell hasn't done anything. It is McConnell who moved forward, you know, Donald Trump's quote unquote tax reform bill that even Lee Zeldin and Peter King voted against that put us in this predicament in the first place. So I understand the frustration people have. I agree with you that the VA is a disgrace. It is another bloated bureaucracy that just can't do its fundamental function. You know, I have students at Suffolk County Community College who have been waiting 3 years for their first checkup. It's an absolute disgrace. But if you want Chuck Schumer to have the power to change your life, well, you know, get McConnell out of office.
Listen, I understand that, but there's just, to me, it's disingenuous, you know, to talk about these charitable contributions and everything else. Say what you want about the tax plan and everything else. It's terrible if you're going before a camera and giving somebody a false hope here. It's never going to happen. Now, a couple of things. Laura Gillen has been a fascinating figure to me in Hempstead. Your neck of the woods in and around. Is she over her head? I mean, she has gone. Listen, it's not an easy spot she has been put in. You know, taking over the reins and everything else. Contractors involved here, hired by others. You know, the latest thing with Malibu and everything else. You know, I tell you, she's a feisty one. I'll tell you that much. In your opinion, can Gillen survive as far as getting reelected here?
I think the short answer is it's going to be close, but she can't. Laura has surrounded herself with good, smart people who understand the business of government and understand economics. She's been able to make strategic points when necessary. This Malibu thing is an example of it. You know, exposing the remnants of the Santino and Murray administrations for, you know, a lot of this, you know, in, you know, smoke-filled backroom contracting business that still goes on. I think is a winner with voters, and it's proven to be time and time again that the corruption issue in these town level races resonates with voters, and it resonated with the last time. Laura Gillen, if you're down in Hempstead, she is everywhere. She's working hard. She's always talking to voters, always engaging people. And look, she has a history of doing well with moderates, with independent women. And these are all key constituencies in winning this race. She's also had been very visible in supporting the Belmont Project, in supporting the Nassau Hub, and those are transformative projects that clearly delineate her from her predecessors. If you recall, it was Kate Murray and the Republicans in Hempstead Town Hall that sent the Islanders to Brooklyn in the first place. And if you don't think that Islander fans are like a tangible block of voters in that neck of the woods, ask Kate Murray, because that's the reason why she's not the Nassau County District Attorney right now.
Excellent point. Excellent point. You know, let's not forget Murray and that debacle. I mean, that's why your Islanders folks are playing on the other side here. Okay? That's a great point. And Gillen, she gets some points, and she does, in my opinion. All right, let's move a little bit east. Couple of things. Before we let you go, you know, yeah, and again, you got some big races. You know, we're not far. Okay? We'll get through July and August, and then let the games begin, as far as I'm concerned. September, October, then November the 5th. You know, you got a contentious one. This is a very important year for folks. And I'll tell you this, you know, the extra voting period and everything else will come into play, Jeff. But you got the county executive. You know, this has been you haven't even seen the real ugliness yet. It's going to come out. But you got a county exec who's already had 8 years vying for term three. You got a controller in Suffolk. You know, listen, the finances are a disaster. The economics, we know that. We know that the differential in money is huge. $2 million plus as far as the incumbent. Listen, he's made some headway, good endorsements, a couple he'd like to have back as far as the controller is concerned. How do you see this one? You know, give me the GEO forecast as far as the next couple of months are concerned here.
I certainly think the knives are going to come out. I think that Steve Ballone has become a trophy kill for the new state Republican chairman. So clearly this is going to get negative. This is going to get nasty. And I think that Republicans are going to try to rely on that same base of folks that put Trump over in Suffolk County to try to unseat the county executive. Now, do I think that's going to happen? No. I think if the race were to be held today, the county executive would probably win comfortably. It's true that the John Kennedy is a guy who party lines, who's popular with moderates, who's popular with labor households, and he's a guy who's won countywide when being outspent before. I mean, you know, he won the county comptroller's race when Jim Garin spent a whole lot more money than he did. But due respect to all those guys, they're not Steve Ballone. Steve Ballone enjoys dead president popularity numbers in a lot of corners of this county that are very, very rich in votes. And I would be very surprised if he did not win fairly comfortably, you know, by 4 or 5 points if the race were held today. That margin can increase over time, but this is, you're talking about one of the most proven vote getters in modern Suffolk County history. And unlike Tom Suozzi and some of these other guys who were very popular and had a rough go trying to get a third term, we have yet to see a clear mandate for why we shouldn't reelect Steve Ballone, right? If you recall Tom Suozzi in 2009, there was this energy tax that was kind of hung around the Democrats' neck, right? They voters had an issue. They had a prerogative. But there's no prerogative here. You know, he's going to run on holding the line on taxes, on protecting our environment, which is something that plays incredibly well out here. And don't forget that in his back pocket, the governor of the state of New York is a big fan of Steve Ballone. So I would
listen.
I would
I agree with you. Listen, he's got a lot of friends in Albany, but you can't tell me if people pay attention when you peel away the proverbial onion, as I always like to say. You can't tell me that people aren't aware of the fact: A, you have $100 million annual deficit, $2 billion in debt. You have a general fund property tax deal that's flat as a pancake. You have your increased fees all over the place of $100 mil. You know, parks, burglar alarm, what am I forgetting? Red light cameras, vehicle reg, mortgage. You know, I go on and on here. You know, you go down the rope. Listen, you want to talk bond rating? 7 on the decline with an 8 coming? You know, if you peel away that proverbial onion, you can make the case that from a fiscal standpoint, it's a disaster.
Sure. You certainly can. And in 2013 in Nassau County, Democrats tried to do that against Ed Mangano. But at the end of the day, the key thing you said here, Jay, is pay attention. Because generally speaking, voters don't. Voters have had 8 years of seeing Steve Ballone's name and face everywhere in Suffolk County, just like they did with Ed Mangano in 2013. His name recognition far surpasses that of his counterpart. And that's how people are going to be voting in this election. I'm all for voter engagement. I'm all for people peeling back the onion and making their own decision based upon what the numbers say. But, you know, history dictates that's not what's going to happen. These elections on the local level are about turnout and they're about repetition and the science of turning out voters. And there's been very few candidates in modern history that are better at doing that than the sitting county executive.
Listen, always a pleasure to review and go over, and what would certainly become a reality in the next couple of months, and we'll do it again real soon. How's that?
You got it.
All right, good rest of the summer for Mr. Gio. Jeffrey, thank you. Millennial Strategies, and we've got a break, and we'll give you a couple of headlines after this.
Do you know a great American? Westbury wants to salute them by proudly presenting the